I spoke yesterday a little bit about Parashat Baal Peh and the ferocious struggle of studying Parashat Baal Peh and I want to talk about something a little bit different today. It's based on the same Medrash Tanchuma that I alluded to yesterday, but it's also found in the Gemara Gittin. After the Egel, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu re-delivers Torah to Moshe, it's a very interesting pasuk. Ki ha-pi ha-divar ma'ila karati et chabris. Al-pi ha-divar ma'ila karati et chabris. Now the Gemara in Gittin quotes Rabbi Yishmael, who says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu enacted a special covenant with Moshe Rabbeinu surrounding Torah Shabbat. La-karas HaKadosh Baruch Hu brisim Yisrael ela al-Torah Shabbat. Very strange. What does it mean to have a bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And that bris is pivoted on Torah Shebaal Peh. So, one of the answers, and this is the answer which I think the Medrash Tanchuma is alluding to, and I'll read it in a moment, is the following. When you take a look at Jewish history, and all the titillations, movements, expulsions, deportations, persecutions, the great miracle of human history, 2,000 years of people march through history, being hated, being despised, not having a common homeland, coin, currency, flag, different climates, different time zones, different skin colors, different customs. How did you survive? How did we retain our identity? Remember, it's a dual challenge. Dispersion, lack of national coalescence, compounded by being hated, despised, chased, and burdened. How did we survive? And not just survive, but thrive? So there are many answers to that question. But one of the answers to that question is that no matter where you live, no matter what language you speak, no matter what currency you employ, Jews have a secret language, a secret code. And that secret code is Torah Shebaal Peh. In many ways, contrasted with Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav, by definition, is an international sefer. It discusses morality, theology, creation, history of the entire world. Of course, it's pivoted on the Jewish experience because we're the vanguard, but it has a international sweep to it. And the Bible has become the basis for morality and for ethics for other religions who have adopted it and adapted it. In some ways corrupted it, but basically have adapted many of its premises and many of its tenets. So Torah Shebichsav was meant to be primarily a document. Famous Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shopped the Torah to the Arabs, shopped the Torah to the Edomites, shopped the Torah, offered the Torah. What does that mean? If Yishmael had accepted the Torah, the Jews wouldn't have the Torah? No, it just means that they would have received Torah Shebichsav in its pure form. And then, of course, we would have received Torah Shebaal Peh. So Torah Shebichsav has an international echo to it. And, of course, that's great because it changes the human imagination. It's also, Torah Shebichsav becomes vulnerable, becomes corrupted. It becomes, when you think about the reason that from Jews stopped learning Torah Shebichsav for so many years, why did Tanakh recede from the curriculum for hundreds of years? To a degree, it's because of this corruption, that people felt and feared that Torah Shebichsav was being colonized and typecast by other religions for theological agendas. So Jews retreated. We're not going to learn. We're not going to try to go toe-to-toe with the Christian world and try to prove to them whether Isaiah speaks about Melech HaMashiach or speaks about others. So therefore, we'll just receive. That will be their world, that will be their sphere, and we'll occupy our sphere. But Torah Shebaal Peh is something which is uniquely Jewish. That's why Chazal actually prohibited teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to a guy. There's an issue, the Gemara Marit Katan says, you're not allowed to teach Torah Shebaal Peh to a Gentile, because it's meant to remain something very, very uniquely Jewish. In fact, when I first started writing Internet Shiurim, I asked Rav Lichtenstein, because I received this beautiful letter, like in 1997, 1998, from some pastor in Memphis, who somehow started reading my Gemara Shiurim and sharing it with his congregation. And he wrote this beautiful letter that had so much Kavod HaTorah and Kavod Rabbanim in it. Like, I passed it out to my shiur. I said, you should have as much Kavod HaTorah as this pastor in Tennessee or something. This is beautiful. Rabbi, you've changed my life. And credo, you know, God's blessings unto you. You should have a lot. Like, beautiful, beautiful description. So I asked Rav Lichtenstein, am I allowed to write these articles for the internet if it's going to end up educating Gentiles in Torah Shebaal Peh? And Rav Aaron said, the isser of educating Torah Shebaal Peh is only if you do it in a methodical way. If you invite a guy and you teach him, okay, here's a Tosfos and here's a Rashi, and this is how you come to a Svara, this is how you come to a Maskana. But if you're just on a college campus and you're sitting next to a person who says, you know what, I'm interested in what Talmud is, and you just share, just by way of conversation, just by way of an anecdote, a Gemara here, a Gemara there, what Chazal went to, you're not violating the Isser. Certainly not if you're putting Torah on the internet and you're not directing it at a Gentile, you're directing it to whoever wants to read. But you're not allowed to sit down and teach a person methodically Torah Shebaal Peh. There's actually a very interesting question that came up in the Kovna Ghetto. Kovna Ghetto, one of the rabbis there, just passed away about 10 years ago, Rav Ushri, who wrote the Sefer Shelos Tshuvot Min HaMamakim, as you may have heard. So part of his challenge was he was placed in charge of the library that they were trying to preserve for perpetuity, to show what the Jewish people were like, and they asked him to teach them Torah Shebaal Peh. Of course, it wasn't a real question, because they would have killed him otherwise, and there's no din of Erev Eliyavur, so the answer was obvious, he had to teach. But forgetting the Isser per se, it's not just that it's us who teach Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's impossible to learn Torah Shebaal Peh unless you have a Rebbe. Torah Shebaal Peh is a code. You can't really learn Torah Shebaal Peh unless you have someone to teach it to you. Torah Shebichsav is openly... Torah Shebichsav is something, is a text in a document, which... Any person can study, any person can read, and have easy access to. Torah Shebaal Peh, if you don't have a Rebbe, there are very, very few people, said, there are very, very few people who are able to succeed at Torah Shebaal Peh without a Rebbe. Chazon Ish, maybe, some people through history, but even Chazon Ish had Rebbeim at younger stages of his life. So, if you ask ourselves, what's the secret code of being a Jew? No matter where we've been over the last 2,000 years, matzah is matzah, tefillin or tefillin, Mikvah is mikvah, Shabbos is Shabbos, Nevela is Nevela, Trefus, I mean, same code. You could be a Spaniard and you land in Yemen, and all of a sudden you speak in the same language. You speak Spanish, he speaks Arabic, same language. You could be a Ukrainian Jew and you land in Argentina, or you land in Portugal. Okay, he speaks Portuguese and Brazil, he speaks. Same language. It's not just the same language in terms of practice, it's also the same language in terms of thought. It's not just that we practice the same matzah and sukkah and lulav and tefillin. But world learning, I mean, all of Am Yisrael is now learning Parshas Noach. You could land in Buenos Aires, and all of a sudden, you'd be on the same intellectual wavelength as people that you'd never met. And if you're studying Daf Yomi, you could land in Siberia and find a Daf Yomi class taking place in Siberia and be on the exact same wavelength, whatever they're learning in Sanhedrin. I'm not following Daf Yomi. So it's not just... אני יכול לשאול אותו כמה דקות? Okay, so what are we talking about? So we're talking about it's the same language, and that's what has led to our preservation. Remember a funny scene? I may have told it to you a couple of years ago, about 10 years ago. There was a swine flu epidemic. So everyone's very, very careful in public spaces not to get too close to anyone else. So people were walking through the airports, you remember, with those little masks over their face. And you'd get onto these small little planes, and people would not look at each other and not touch each other. They'd walk through the aisles, dancing a pirouette, not to get too close to anyone. So I was on this plane to Toronto, and no one said a word to one another. Like, if you talk to anyone, you infect him with the swine flu, or become infected. No one looked at him. It was Mamisha, a plane of mannequins, for an hour going to Toronto. Flight's delayed. And it's one of these flights that you get off on the tarmac, not into the terminal, and you carry your stuff into the terminal. So there we are. It's 1:40 in the morning, and as we're flying to Toronto, I'm looking at these three guys in the front with their ski gear and their baseball hats. So I'm saying, these guys are like a dead score for being from Jews from YU, like going skiing or something. There's no way that these guys are. Okay, so we land on the tarmac, and we're waiting because there's a bit of a delay. It's freezing cold, a bit of a delay in getting our luggage, and I go over to them. And they're clearly from Jews. And I say, do you need to know where to sleep? You need a place for davening tomorrow? You need to know where this kosher food we all take out? I think it was Blackberries those days. You all start connecting with one another, connecting with people. And people on the tarmac were looking at us like, we're crazy. You don't know each other. No one said a word. It was a flight of strangers. No one knew each other. And the truth is, I didn't know them. But we had the same language. Like, immediately, we had to help each other find a place to stay and find a place to eat and find a place to daven and find if there were people that needed a mikvah, find a mikvah. Like, we need to move in herds. We need to live in communities. That's what makes halacha so viscous. It creates viscosity. and coalesce in that people can't live. You can't just choose a mountain and live somewhere. You need shlita, you need a mikvah, you need minyan. We live in clusters, and that's our common language, and you can land anywhere, and you have that common language. So, Torah Shebaal Peh is that Briz Hashem says, for survival, you're going to face incredible, unprecedented historical challenges. You're going to be hated and despised because you're the emblems of monotheism and morality. You're going to move from place to place in this world. It's going to be difficult, and you'll lose common language and common culture. Thank God we're now rebuilding common culture, rebuilding common language, returning to our land. We have a flag, we have a coin, we have an army, we have soldiers. So we have cultural pivots that unite us. But for 2,000 years, Torah Shebaal Peh was our secret language. It's our treaty of survival. And that's what this Medrash Tanchuma speaks about. And I just want to read something very, very, I don't know, I'll let you term it and let you apply an adjective to it, because it's certainly intriguing. Hashem promises us in Parshas Nitzavim, Ki lo tishakach mipi zara, the Torah will never be forgotten. Right. So that pasuk, we talked about it. And Baruch Hashem, it's come true. And even during dark hours when Torah seemed to be completely lost, speak to your grandparents, if they're still alive. People that grew up in the 40s and 50s had every reason to believe the Torah would completely, completely collapse. Post-Holocaust, the yeshivas had been bolderized, had been emasculated. As America, Treif and Medina, no one thought Torah would revive itself. And Eretz Yisrael was very, very secular, hyper-secular. But the Medrash assumes that that promise that Hashem delivered, that Torah would never be forgotten, is specifically about Torah Shebaal Peh. V'av HaKadosh Baruch Hu karas brisim Yisrael is the language of the Medrash Tanchuma on Parshas Noach. Shelo tishachach Torah Shebaal Peh mipim or mipizaram at sof kol adaros. Even to the point where the Medrash traces that even at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Beis HaMikdash Rishon, everyone knows that there was a pre-Churban about 18 years before the Beis HaMikdash was finally burnt, the galus of Yehoyachin, the galus of Mordechai, Asher Haglam Yushalayim, Imagola, Asher Haglasa, Imechanya Melech Yuda. And the way Tanakh presents it, part of Nebuchadnezzar's plan was to ransack the Jewish leadership and relocate them to Babel so he could assure and ease the Jewish transition into Babel. He took a few young leaders and placed them in Babel a few years before he ransacked Yushalayim. Then the Jews would find Babylonian cultured leaders to help them ease the transition. But according to this Medrash, according to this Medrash, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was really up to by allowing a pre-Golus was the formation of two yeshivas in Babel to make sure that Torah Shebaal Peh specifically would continue to be studied. There's a very, very long description in the Medrash that these were the two yeshivas that were established in Babel 18 years or so before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, to assure the continued study of Torah Shebaal Peh, and, hard to know whether the Medrash means it literally or figuratively, but those three yeshivas lasted throughout all of Jewish history. They were never shut down by Yavon, they were never canceled by Edom, there were always two yeshivas, in the Medrash's jargon, that were able to keep the flame of Torah Shebaal Peh alive. Now what does that mean, there were two yeshivas? Who were those two yeshivas in 1650? Who were those two yeshivas in 1210? Of their two yeshivas, but that concept, that Torah Shebaal Peh, and to a degree, and this is where the Medrash becomes very, very provocative, sounds as if almost that's the reason that the Jews didn't fully return from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, so those two yeshivas of Torah Shebaal Peh and Babel could maintain their stability and their continuity. Had they returned to Eretz Yisrael, they would have been in the line of fire, as opposed to being in Babel, where they were. And this is a very, very active question for Amorayim. Should they move to Israel, where Torah wasn't as rich? If you read Torah Yerushalmi, it's a very sad sefer. It's very, very condensed. It's very dark. The conversations are very clipped and truncated. And you get a sense of the people that are being persecuted by the Roman authorities who are barely able to scrape together a very, very dry shas. And you get a sense of richness when you read Torah Shebaal Peh and Talmud Bavli, not just in the concepts and the logic itself, but also in the world that they live in, their interactions, their communities, their families, their yeshivas, their communal structures. You get a sense of a flourishing people that are able to produce a flourishing Torah. So there were some real dilemmas for Chazal about whether they should move to Israel, and that was, of course, part of the machlokas between Rabbi Zeira and Rabbi Huda, quoted in the end of the Gemara in Ksuvos. Rabbi Huda did not want Rabbi Zeira to move to Eretz Yisrael. because he felt there was too much Torah to be learned in Babel that couldn't be replicated in Eretz Yisrael. Again, today, thank God, not only has Eretz Yisrael become the homeland, it's also become the flourishing. People come to Eretz Yisrael to study Torah. It's very rare that people say, I can learn Torah better in Chutz Lazo. There may be some cases. People feel they have better support systems there, better financial stipends if they feel they can study Torah. That's a legitimate concern. But I want you to see Torah Sheh Baal Peh as this survival threat, survival treaty with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, facing very, very strange cultural challenges and being able to retain this common language, both in practice and in thought, that has united Jews, and to a degree, even that Medrash almost implies as if Torah Sheh Bechsav will be forgotten at certain points. And I think it's fair to say that for many, many Jews, Torah Sheh Bechsav, I wouldn't say it was forgotten, we still read the Parsha, but the rich study of Tanakh, which Baruch Hashem is being revived in our day in Eretz Yisrael, in many respects being spearheaded by this yeshiva and its associated institutions that don't only teach biology, sometimes actually teach Tanakh. You got to take the good with the bad. Obviously, there's no free lunch in life, and we have a major institution that's going to cause certain, obviously. We all get along. We all are part of the same institution. And by the way, some other time, maybe at Avad, we'll talk about what are the challenges of the Tanakh revival. Don't just think that it's all peaches and cream. It's all wonderful. There's some real challenges, and some of them are internal. How is Tanakh being taught? Some of them are peripheral. How is that affecting other areas of thought and other areas of authority and rabbinic? So that's something we should talk about. But I want you to just assume that it's unequivocal, unqualified blessing. There are some real challenges here, and I think it's fair and honest for us to try to address them at some point. But I want you to try to set the tone over the next 2-3 days till Shabbos, till we get to Parshas Lech Lecha. This should be a real challenge for you to sink yourselves, immerse yourselves into the world of Torah Sheh Baal Peh, to become a master of Torah Sheh Baal Peh, to start a lifelong commitment to studying and decoding. And it's difficult, and it's overwhelming, but this is our legacy, and this is, not only do we need people like that, as I mentioned yesterday, but this is why we've survived. I mean, if you ask me who my Zionist hero is, it's Torah Sheh Baal Peh, it's Talmud Bavli, because we never would have come back if we lost our national identity. Without our national identity, we couldn't have returned to Eretz Yisrael, so. Okay. So we're now going to move back to Bava Kamma and restart.